mistaken view sometimes happens. Are false dualisms. What do I mean by this? Where people put two opposites up against each other as if somehow they are mutually exclusive. It's kind of very binary. It's one or the other. So people might talk about heaven is holy, earth is sinful, as if there's a complete separation between those two. That everything that is spiritual is good and everything that is physical is bad. And therefore, we don't need to think about the environment or care about the planet because that's physical, and therefore it's not really helpful or spiritual. We need to think about the holy things, and the holy things aren't physical. Where that comes from is not the Bible. It definitely doesn't come from Jesus. It comes from Greek philosopher Plato, and he basically said that there is matter, in other words, physical stuff, and that's evil, and the whole point is to escape that in order to get to the spirit. That was a Greek philosophy. It had nothing whatsoever to do with the teachings of Christ. But there are some Christians who have this idea that somehow if it's physical, if I can touch it, if I can feel it, well, it must be sinful and worldly, and therefore I need to do nothing with it or dispose of it. Here's another one. Holy exploitation. Particularly prevalent in some Western theology ideas. This idea that God has placed humanity in charge of creation and therefore we can use it how we want. And because of that, some people have said that the petrochemical industry, for example, well, it can pollute the earth as much as it likes because God has given us responsibility as humanity to use the environment, to use the physical world for our own ends. And if it meets our own ends, that's all that matters. So go for nuclear this, go for petrochemical that, go for all sorts of things that pollute the environment because God has put us in charge to do whatever we like. Here's another one. That there is limited salvation. That God only saves those who say a particular kind of prayer in a particular kind of way, like a sinner's prayer. So if somebody can say a particular type of prayer coming to God in confession, then that's okay, they're saved, but anything else is not saved. What we're actually going to see is that salvation is far bigger than just us as human beings. God does not just come to save human beings. God comes to save all of creation. The whole of creation is caught up in God's redemptive work. The work of Christ on the cross was not just to get you from earth to heaven. It was to get heaven to earth. And all of creation benefits from the saving work of Christ. So caring for the environment then. Why do we do this? Well, it's a Christian concern. Why? Well, if we open our Bibles at the beginning, Genesis, which Genesis means the beginnings, the origins, and we start to read, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Right, stop there. That's it. You don't need to read any more than the first 10 verses, the first 10 words of the Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's sufficient for all Christians to say, I have a deep and profound responsibility to play my part in looking after what God has created. Why? Because God created it. The heavens and the earth are God's creation. They're not my creation, they're His creation. And if He has made it, then I need to respect and honor what He has made. So caring for the environment is not something we should let others get on with. It should be something that every Christian should be really passionate about. It's really interesting at the moment that an awful lot of the environmental agenda is led by those who are not Christians. And they are speaking prophetically to us to say, catch up. We as Christians have such a deep and profound responsibility to care for the environment. Why? Because in the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth. So we say the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For He founded it on the seas and established it on the waters. Whose earth is it? The Lord's earth, God's earth. And if He has made it, then we have a responsibility to honour what he has made. How does he do it? He makes it good. So if you're part of one of the Lent pop-up small groups at the moment, and it's been great to see the different groups thriving at the moment, we're working our way through those 6 days of creation. And we're realizing that actually what God has made, he declares good, like real good. Have you ever just sat on a beach and looked at the sea, and you've just sat listening to the lap of the waves? I think, wow, this is beautiful. I'm finding a real peace here. There's a real moment going on. And maybe the sun kind of rises up or it sets, depending on what time of the day you're sitting on that beach. And you see the sky before you, you think, oh my goodness, that is just beautiful. But you can do that in your garden too. And you can do that as you walk down the street. If you're walking late in the sort of the end of the day and the sun is setting, you can be in an urban place. There can be all sorts of traffic and planes flying over and doing all of that stuff. But the backdrop is just beautiful. So when we sing earlier on, one of the songs that talks about how we are insignificant, well, standing and looking up at the cosmos, wow, I really am. In the scale of that, I am insignificant. And yet the mystery is that the God who made all of that loves me, loves you, knows you deeper and better than you even know yourself. And we see in creation God's creativity. I mean, how hilarious is creation? The environment. Look at some of the detail. You know, a giraffe. I mean, when a giraffe is formed and over that whatever process, I think there's a hilarity around that. And you look at other different aspects of creation and the created world, and there's patterns, and there's beauty, and there's all sorts of design in there. There's creativity, but at the same time, God's creative acts are also the time of his most awesome power. So we see in creation something of God's fun and his enjoyment. The thought then is that God enjoys what he has made in you. He enjoys your company. He enjoys you. You make him laugh. I'm not just when you're telling him your own plans of what you think is going to happen in the future. He enjoys your company. There is fun. Because God who created continues to create and recreate. There was a cardinal, John Newman, and we talk about a Newman experience, this idea that actually there's a moment where you just get tingles down your spine as you look at some aspects of beauty in created world. Wow, a sense of awe. Wow. If that's how beautiful that is, how even more beautiful must the Creator be? If that's the power that it took to make that, how powerful must God be? And that can help us with our struggles at times. Because the same power that created is the same power that can change situations in your life too. All creation praises. All. So it talks about in Isaiah chapter 55, for example, about the trees clapping their hands, having a right old celebration. Psalm 96, let the fields be jubilant and everything in them. Let all the trees of the forest sing for joy. Let all creation rejoice before the Lord. Wow. It's not just you and I that sing and praise. Let even the stones cry out in praise of him. Now, it's not saying that a tree literally bursts into physical song in the way that you and I burst into physical song. But it is saying that all creation is able to bring glory to God by simply being itself, fulfilling its God-given purpose or role in creation. We praise, everything praises. And that inspires us to worship. So when I see these guys leading us at the front, they inspire me to worship. And when I hear your voices coming from behind me, you too inspire me into worship. We encourage and bless one another. When I see the beauty of creation, I'm inspired to worship the Creator. It draws praise out of me. Because why? Creation holds up a mirror to reflect God's glory back to him, inspiring us in our worship. And maybe creation then speaks also to us of God. Have you ever been up a mountain or got to the top of a hill and you've been looking down on things and you think, wow, what a view that is. Amazing. And you can just find yourself reflecting on not only who you are, but who God is too. Beautiful, stunning. And maybe God seems even bigger when you're looking up at the stars because you begin to work through the numbers and the scale, which is just absolutely mind-blowing. God, you are infinitely more powerful than I could ever comprehend. The same God who flings stars into space is the same God who meets you at your bedside, who's with you in hospital, who journeys with you when you have to go for that health checkup, who brings healing and wholeness. And yet creation groans. There is a real and genuine groan within creation. So Jeremiah 12 puts it like this: how long will the land lie parched and the grass in every field be withered? Because those who live in it are wicked. The animals and birds have perished. Wow. Yes, there's beauty in creation, and it was created good, but there's a groaning that goes on. Things aren't quite as they should be, not as they were intended to be in the first place. Hosea puts it like this, chapter 4. Hear the word of the Lord, because the Lord has a charge to bring against you who live in the land. If any of you live in some land, wherever it is, that's it, that's us. There is no faithfulness, no love, no acknowledgement of God in the land. There is only cursing, lying and murder, stealing and adultery. They break all bounds and bloodshed follows bloodshed. In other words, there is unrighteous living. People aren't living in the way that they were supposed to live. There's a self-seeking kind of way. Because of this, the land dries up. And all who live in it waste away. The beasts of the field, the birds in the sky, and the fish in the sea are swept away. Because of human activity, because of human behaviors and drives, there is a negative consequence for the created world, be that animals, birds, fish, land, or whatever. So what we're beginning to realize is that we humans are the cause of much of that groaning. And we do it in all sorts of very different ways, whether it be through overfishing or through polluting the environment, overuse of plastics, reliance on fossil fuels. It could be all sorts of different things. We all do it in different ways. But sometimes our behaviors bring joy to God, Creator. Other times our behaviors, our actions, can have a negative effect on God's created world. But Colossians 1 reminds us that he is Lord of all creation. He's not just Lord of humans, he's Lord of all creation. So it reads in Colossians chapter 1, the Son, that's Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created. Things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Wow. Jesus holding all things together, not just simply answering your, mine and yours prayers, but the whole of creation caught up. And it goes on, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. When Jesus went to the cross, he went to the cross for you and I, but he also went to the cross for the whole of creation. All of creation is able to be brought back into a right relationship as intended, back into a peaceful relationship. And so through Jesus Christ, you and I get to be brought back into relationship with him, but also with each other and with the created world too. Having a right relationship with the created environment. So whose earth? God's earth. Why do we get involved in supporting and caring for the environment? Because in the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth. It's his. Imagine if I made a cake and I spent ages making that cake. I was really proud of it. It might not have been the perfect cake, but I was pleased with it. I've invested my personality into it. I've had joy as I've made it. And I've been thinking about the people that are going to get to eat this cake afterwards. And I've been thinking about them and having nice thoughts about how they will enjoy my cake. Imagine if I come to present my cake that I have made, and those who receive it, they chuck some on the floor, they squash it in their hands, they wipe it on the surface. That's not what I made the cake for. I've given that cake, it's a good cake. I think it's good. And I've given it out of love. And they've trashed it. We must not be those people who, when God has made things and he's made them good, then go on to trash what he has made. And we're going to be thinking over the next couple of weeks about how we can take practical steps to ensure that we are looking after all that God has made. Not as a waggy finger, not as a guilt trip, but because there is joy in coming before the Lord of all creation. Let's take a moment to pray, and then we'll respond in some worship.